You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, Alex.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the show.
Excited to be here. Excited to hang out with you.
I feel like I'm talking to the man.
Oh, my gosh. I do qualify that statement. I am a man. Mm-hmm. That's true.
I don't get too nervous for these, but you're just like...
Are you kidding me?
You've been kind of my mentor. Even though I'm a generation older than you, you're the first one that I dabbled in with listening to your podcast years ago. And I think you struck a nerve with me being a long time in my same role as a pharmacy owner. And just you got the kind of the juices flowing on both sides, both of your leadership in the pharmacy area and just some of the hope that you give to people that may not want to be in pharmacy anymore.
Well, it certainly has been a long journey. I'm kind of honored and privileged that I get to do what I do.
For the couple people out there that don't know who you are, introduce yourself and tell us what's going on hot right now. What's exciting?
So my name's Alex Barker. I'm a pharmacist and I joined the profession back in 2012. I don't want to say I was indoctrinated, but I really believed in the idea of practicing pharmacy to its fullest and getting into clinical care. And I believed in that dream, and I still do. But through practice, I found out that it really wasn't my passion. I also found out that I kind of lack the temperament, personality, and even some of the skills necessary to be a great clinician. And so unfortunately, at the same time, I also was dealing with a lot of like career stuff. Unfortunately, some bullies in the workplace, some unfortunate things happened to me in my career, in my very first official job after residency. And I was like, what am I doing? I had always thought I was going to be an academic, honestly. It came from a passion of teaching and speaking. And I thought, wow, this is a great thing to do for me. But at the same time, I'm like, who would want to learn from someone who isn't enjoying clinician work?
Right.
I had a really big self-limiting belief. And while all this was going on, I got into entrepreneurship, something I had never considered before in my life. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's this whole world out here that I never had learned about my entire life. My dad, my parents, they were working people, you know, career men and women. So I just thought, that's what I'll do. And so I used a lot of my energies and passions to build some businesses over that time frame until now. And in 2017, that's when I launched the Happy PharmD, which is kind of like my home base. It's where I hang out. And it's where we create content, courses, conferences to help pharmacists engage them in pharmacy. And as you mentioned, sometimes even out of pharmacy, but that's actually not too common now from what I've observed. The majority of people want to stay in pharmacy, want to revitalize their careers. Mm. But that's been my work now. As of this recording, 3 years. We started in January 2017, and it's been a pretty wild ride over those 3 years.
It was in August of 2018 that you finally jumped ship. No insurance, no one to blame, no one to complain about to your wife and so on. You were gone from that.
Except myself.
Except yourself. You just could complain about yourself.
Yes, complain about me. Yeah.
Wow.
I like to think of myself as an academic without an institution.
Yeah.
So a lot of my work is centered around teaching, mentoring, coaching, and as of recently, researching topics within pharmacy and specifically careers.
Yeah.
It's ultimately like if I didn't consider entrepreneurship, I would have gone the career man. I would have gone into academia.
Mm-hmm.
No questions asked. That was the trajectory of my career and what I wanted. But after doing some interviews at institutions, after people actually rejecting me and my applications because they didn't think I was a great fit or I wasn't a team player, I decided I'm going to put all my energies into building a business. And it's worked out so far. I'm really enjoying it. I get to hang out with you on a Friday morning. And I mean, I'm living my dream. It's hard to imagine the 5 or 6 years of work it took to get to this point, but here I am.
When I was thinking of our conversation today, I was thinking, Alex is the Moses of pharmacy. that you were leading the people into
leading our people
leading
into
the people
land.
Out into the desert first, you know, and then the promised land and so on. But what caught my ear right now was you're saying that it's a combination and maybe even weighted heavier on the people that want to be satisfied in pharmacy than necessarily leaving. Touch on that a little bit more.
Right. We take everyone who comes to us with a very them-centered approach. For a time, I considered when I launched the Happy PharmD, the biggest driver I had was people kept asking me about how do I create a business and how can I do something on the side like you're doing? Because that's what I had been doing for like 5 years.
Right.
And so I taught some people how to do those things. Some people created business successfully because I had cut my teeth on mainly business coaching. I learned how to coach and then I focused in on business and,
gotcha.
And people who owned small companies, 6 to 7 figure businesses.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, well, I know the basics. I've done it myself. I've been a part of multiple businesses, franchises, selling things online, Amazon selling, things like that. And so I thought, well, let's teach pharmacists these things.
Right.
But I kept getting a single piece of feedback from even my most successful students. And it was, well, if I create this business, I'm still stuck at my job. And that I felt really defeated. I felt like, I don't know how this is going to work. We shifted focus to helping pharmacists find better jobs and better careers. I have to admit, it's not exactly what I wanted to do. Career coaching is something that is much easier by comparison to business coaching and
sure.
consulting. But it was the need. And we know from the stats, 50 to 70% of pharmacists are burned out.
Right.
And in my ideology, I really do believe that the majority of that is caused by the workplace environment, not internal things really going
sure.
on, although those contribute.
Right.
So we shifted, let's teach pharmacists to focus on careers. And an interesting thing has come from this, from our students. So the pharmacists who transition into jobs that they actually love or enjoy, some just even want an environment where there's less stress, but it's a similar environment. What we have found is all of a sudden they're ignited again. They have a passion, a curiosity about something. And many of them have started small businesses or passion projects, nonprofits, or even developing things within their own company that they're pursuing. And so, you know, my goal for me personally with the Happy PharmD in the beginning, it transitioned to helping pharmacists create inspiring careers and lives. And I haven't created the best words to describe this, but now what I'm hoping is that what we can do is help pharmacists create jobs because of how bad the job market is and spur on innovation within pharmacy.
You started out by saying maybe we help pharmacists start side projects and businesses. Could be in pharmacy or outside of pharmacy.
Yep.
But then you were realizing that some of these may only have contributed 20% of their income. And so a lot of these people said, hey, this is good, but we don't think maybe our own entrepreneurial business is going to cut it. And so we need to focus on that 80% still, whether it's in pharmacy or maybe working for somebody else, but it's getting our career better, but not necessarily doing it only with this great idea startup business. Am I wrong on that?
No, it's pretty spot on. I have to admit, you know, the past influences your present. So I was very much in the mindset of business.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I had surrounded myself with ever since 2012. It's what my head was in. It's what I was researching, reading, talking to other people about.
Being an owner and an entrepreneur and doing this.
Right. And so this could be a whole separate discussion, Mike, but I'm sure that you would, after talking with all the pharmacists that you've talked to on the show, as well as just talking to pharmacists in general, there's a lot going against our profession when it comes to becoming an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Specifically, our perfectionism attitude, our desire to have everything right, as we should. We're pharmacists.
Sure.
But unfortunately, you can't be an entrepreneur and a perfectionist.
Right. I've never even fallen into being a perfectionist as a pharmacist, so... Not a great mix. No, just kidding.
Well, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
I think some of my alumni friends would... I don't think they expressly told me during school, like, their concerns for me. Like, Alex, like, you really should care about the details.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Whatever, you know? Whatever.
They'll get the drug. No worries.
Exactly. The average pharmacist wants perfection and wants to have the answers up front. And that's not always conducive to an entrepreneur.
It's not impossible, but and it's not like you have to have a certain personality or innate ability to become an entrepreneur. It's quite the opposite. That's what research shows anyway.
Yeah.
It's difficult to go down that path, and it's difficult to inspire people, but we're working on projects that we're hoping, well, they already are. They are projects that have been somewhat successful in that they are creating revenue streams and they are necessitating the need to hire pharmacists to do certain things.
Mm.
As much as we are like a career development company, like when people ask me, what the heck do you do, Alex? Well, we help pharmacists with career development. My hope is that we can use a lot of our profits and our business to create avenues to inspire and create businesses that need to hire pharmacists.
Gotcha.
There's so much that is wrong with healthcare. I think everyone would agree with that.
Right.
So these are big problems that need pharmacists to solve them. And sadly, this is very frustrating, so I'll try not to get too hyped up about it. The majority of people who are solving those problems are doctors.
Right.
And good for them. They've always been pretty much the healthcare leader. But we hold an expertise that few people know how to communicate or understand the value of.
Right.
So I'm hoping to change that. That's like the big dream, you know, Alex, 40 years from now is creating businesses with pharmacists, probably younger ones, honestly, that want to take risks and create these startups that solve big problems. So that's the hope that I'm going for.
Not trying to necessarily remove them from their degree and from their past and so on, but kind of say, hey, you spent this time in pharmacy. Maybe there's a good fit in pharmacy for you still.
Right.
That pumps up the pharmacy knowledge and so on and not necessarily leaves it.
Right. I don't think the answer is leaving this profession. I think there's still a lot of good in it. But I do think there needs to be some significant changes. You probably didn't join the profession thinking, you know, one out of every two of my pharmacist friends or my alumni buddies are burned out.
Right.
You probably didn't go into a profession thinking we have the 12th or 14th highest suicide rate in the country compared to 400 plus occupations. You probably didn't think, well, I've got to worry about being robbed or the worries of addiction.
Right.
But those are the realities that we battle with. My hope is that we can start inspiring some pharmacists to create some significant changes to improve these problems. And my hope is also to bring light on the things that I don't think are getting the greatest spotlight. So that's the route we're going.
Was your comment there focused on that? Let's shine a light on the negative more or on the positive more?
I'd probably say both. I mean, I try to be more positive than negative. It's really easy to complain about the negative.
Right.
In pharmacy. Yeah. You don't have to search very hard online to find out how people really feel in an anonymous way.
Yeah.
I can understand why everyone's angry. I mean, it is very frustrating to deal with these conditions, but complaining about it won't change anything. I do think we need to point a light at some of these things and demand change. And the way to do that, I believe, is by tracking data and showing what companies are doing to change those things. But I also am more trying to focus on the positive, inadvertently. I mean, the happy PharmD, right? So
right.
What we do is we love to showcase stories, business owners, pharmacists who are doing things in those areas and they're showing those changes. And we're trying to facilitate as much as we can.
Right. Alex, you mentioned 40 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
What does your physical day look like 40 years from now? First of all,
physical?
Well, first of all,
hopefully I'm alive.
You got to be in your 30s.
I'm 31.
31. Okay. So 71. First of all, you got to get the hell out of Michigan because I think I'm stupid living in Grand Rapids. And now, supposedly, you can go anywhere you want to, and you're up in the UP. You guys are really crazy up there. So walk me
through. If you've never
heard
of the UP, it's called the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It's basically Canada.
It's basically the North Pole. That's what we figure down here.
Yeah.
Take me through your day 30 or 40 years from now. I know your mission. I know your goal. But what does that look like? What does that look like for you? Now, you might say, well, I solved it and I'm sitting on the beach. But my imagination is saying that you would be in it somehow still. What are you doing? What does your day look like in 30 years?
Ideally, much different. More wrinkly, I'm sure. I have to believe that I'm doing the same things that I'm doing now, which are coaching, teaching, and probably public speaking. So I know that when I'm doing my best work is when I get a certain inner feeling, mm-hmm. when I'm more energized than I'm feeling down, and those events, those times happen during those moments. I don't think I'm working 40 hours a week, but I do think that even at 70, I'm probably doing what I'm doing now, which is being like a board member for businesses. I'm probably coaching a young person. I'm probably working on some innovative projects that are, in a way, a catalyst for future things. Like what I hope happens now, someone's probably going to steal this idea from me, but who cares? That's great. Hey, if you steal it, let me come along. Let me help you.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I want to create what they're already doing in so many other industries, which is, you know, startup competitions where innovative people come together and they present an idea and they get funded for that idea. That's what I would love to see the Happy PharmD do.
Cool.
I don't know the first thing about venture capital. I don't want to become an expert, but I do want to fund crazy innovative ideas to, again, kind of meet my mission, which is creating jobs for pharmacists and ideally inspiring more to, compete to, in turn, make a better marketplace. But that's probably what life looks like 70 years from now. Probably just variation of...
Not 70.
What? Sorry, 70 years old.
You're
going to
be 101.
Yeah. By then, who knows? I mean,
we might live that long.
Yeah, we might live that long. Right. So I don't know, but I feel like maybe I'm not in the Upper Peninsula. Sure. Maybe it's Florida or Cancun.
My best friend's from Iron Mountain.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So that's like 10 minutes from me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. It's a great place to be from, is what I like to say.
Yeah. And he fakes it. He comes down here. He wears flannel and you know, these goofy Elmer Fudd hats and all that stuff. But he hates the outdoors. He just hates it. So he kind of like pretends he's a youper, but he's not, you know, at heart, he's not like an outdoorsy guy at all.
You know, it's fun to pretend.
So are you like at home doing that? Or are you at a office that you're owning and meeting with people and talking to people all day and going to lunches and things? How would you actually like to function in your day?
Probably the way I am now.
What is now?
Now is... Are we doing like a schedule recap? Is that what we want?
Well, until you hear me yawn, you're okay.
Okay, well, hopefully you, the listener, is engaged by Alex Barker's schedule.
No, I want to know, like, are you working from home or are you not? Are you on the computer? Are you doing this? Do you like in-person meetings? Do you like some travel? Do you like, you know, that kind of stuff? What does your week look like?
The week of Alex Barker is really simple. Mornings are creative endeavors where I'm working on research projects or I'm working on developing new products or new lectures for mainly about pharmacists, careers, and some business. It's a lot of development.
On purpose, are you trying to exclude communication in the mornings?
Oh, yeah.
Because that can be a big waste of like, you know, covering every email and text before you know it, it's 11 o'clock.
Yes. So this is a completely new endeavor for me. I recently hired an executive assistant. And if you have a business, you need one. Holy amazingness. It is the best thing that I have ever done. I only check my emails, Mike, 2 times a week.
Nice.
And I don't know why I haven't done this before. It is so freeing. There's so much less anxiety and stress. I don't feel like I have 1,000 things on my plate. An executive assistant.
That is awesome. That is,
if there's one thing you get hopefully from my ramblings, is please hire someone, even if it's just 5 hours a week, to be your assistant.
And even now, Alex, there's Fiverr and there's ways to do executive assistants. It's not like you have to imagine having someone trailing you. There's ways to morph into that, basically, right?
Yeah, my executive assistant is in Canada, which, yes, the UP is Canada, right? But she's thousands of miles away from me. She's just amazing. So good. But the rest of the day, usually in the afternoons, it's meetings, either with team members that are a part of our support team or our coach team, or it's doing things like this with you. Technically, it's still the morning. Well, it's 12 my time.
You're central time right? You're further.
Right.
Yeah, you're further enough west.
Right. So the afternoons are usually when my mind has like been creatively depleted, and so it's easy for me to talk, and so I enjoy, you know, afternoon meetings where I get to do stuff like this. And that's pretty much it. I usually quit work when my kids come home and I just hang out with them. And that's my day in the frozen tundra. That's the setting, you should know. But yeah, I'm in the office. I'd love to have an in-person office, but then it would just be me. Everyone that I work with is virtual. They're all across the country. So
yeah.
I mean, it'd be great to hire some fellow youpers, but there's not too many tech-savvy people here.
Maybe my friend Dave can hang out with you.
He's welcome. You know. He's welcome to hang out with me.
What do you have as far as team members and so on? I know you have your executive assistant now. Do you have anybody else that's on your payroll, or do you have some contractor kind of thing?
Yeah, we're all contractors, except myself. I'm the only employee. It's an S corp, and I think we have like 11 or 12 team members. Wow. So we have, including myself, we have 5 coaches, and then we have a support team. We've got a lot of, like, I don't know, it's hard to describe. We got like a web guy, marketing, behind the scenes web design. We have a video editor. We have a COO. She's in the Philippines. She handles like all of the back end stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, it's
nice.
It's been so amazing to have this team and to have everyone working with us. The only problem with contractors, as I'm sure you would guess, is, you know, the constant change of guard. You know, about every 6 months, I feel like I lose someone, so I have to go hire a new person. But
right.
It makes it easy because then I don't have to make an employee and pay benefits and all that. But we're getting to that point where I'm starting to wonder, you know, the benefits of going that route. But
mm-hmm.
I considered going the route that you did, which is to create a traditional pharmacist business. And mm-hmm. I liked the idea, but I had a lot of hesitation. And it's because I have to admit, I'm a little selfish. I wanted to create a business that allowed for a lot of freedom. And
right.
that led me down to the path of basically side hustling for 5 years, where I created things on the side that generated revenue when I was sleeping. And so I thought, let's pursue that rather than jumping headlong into something that could potentially put me in a lot of debt and something I don't really know. Yeah. So I chose probably the, I don't know, wimpier route, the safer route in my mind. But there's pluses and benefits to either side. But I have to admit, you know, I'm really happy how things turned out.
There's too much credit saying I created that because I'm a third generation owner from my grandpa and my dad. So I guess I'm a businessman. I guess I'm a touch of an entrepreneur, but sometimes you fall into the management role too. And that's not...
I hate management.
That's not my favorite.
Yeah. Holy cow.
Yeah.
that stuff's the worst. But I mean, you're running the business, right? You've been doing it for years.
I'm the CEO. About 3 years ago, I put in a level of three executives
mm-hmm.
that report to me, but they handle all of the customers and the other team members. So that's kept my hair gray, but it's still there.
Yeah. No, congrats. You got a full head of hair. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Alex, how many hours would you say, on average, are all the contractors putting in per week? In other words, how many hours does your system need right now to run? My daughter said to me, she said, Dad, you should read Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Work Week. And I said, why would I want to double my hours?
Ouch. Yeah, then you've got it down. That's the beauty of a business, is it runs without you, or it should.
That's 25 years later, though, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, you finally got there.
Yeah.
One of the things that really helped me was setting really harsh deadlines for myself. So this past summer, we were able to go on sabbatical for 10 weeks, my wife and our kids, and we traveled all around the country living in a van.
I remember that. Yeah.
Often
down by the river.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it was fantastic. It was wonderful. And the business did just fine without me. To answer your question, I don't know off the top of my head how much our coaches work. Two of them are brand new, so they're not probably putting as much time right now.
Yeah.
But I would say, I mean, at a minimum, maybe 3 to 4 hours. It just depends on how many clients they're working with at a time.
Per week,
right.
Let's say you had employees that knew how to do everything and there was no internet and they were all with you in your office and so on. You'd probably need like one or two full-time people to kind of spread this. And I know they don't have all the skills in that. I'm just saying you probably need one or two full-time people to churn all this.
Yes. To do everything that my team does collectively, I would probably need two FTEs.
Yeah.
But I don't want that.
Don't do it.
No.
Don't do it.
No. No, thank you. I'm perfectly happy. I actually have never read The 4-Hour Work Week, but I know that through osmosis, I've adopted a lot of those things. And that's the beauty of business, is you can delegate, you can hire people to do things, and you get to set your schedule.
Yeah.
And it's it's amazing. So kudos to you for getting down to 2 hours. That's awesome. Well,
Alex, you and I both know Tim Ferriss's book. So what you're doing is what he's talking about, is the hiring of some of these assistants and so on. The other thing he gets into, which whatever you called it, wimpiness or something, but I think it's a great idea that you were able to test out these different businesses. And even more now than in the past. I mean, in the past, can you imagine, to test a business, you had to lease a building and all that stuff. And now within practically a week, you can do A/B testing on 2 Google ads and you can see where that lands. And it might have cost you $20 to test something out.
Yeah.
Tim Ferriss, in his book, he talks about 4 hours. But when he's talking about that, he's talking about 4 hours of maybe stuff that's not his favorite thing to do. If I was an attorney, I'd be billing for 80 hours a week. So I'm always thinking about it. I'm always dwelling on it and so on. If I had to maybe actually bill for the stuff I was actually handling, well, that would be a lot less. But I think the difference is, how do you define it? Is it work or called something else? But it's time.
Right.
Unless you can shut your mind off. You're pretty good at that.
I can. Yeah. I am. Yeah. I made it a priority. Well, my wife and I talked, and we made it a priority for me to shut off the brain, to put away the phone, to be engaged with the kids, you know, when you're not working. Occasionally, I'll get the shower moment, you know, of something. Oh, wow, I need to do this. But the majority of my time, I keep my time, my 9-to-3 time, focused in on doing great and impactful work. And I think what I learned from Tim Ferriss and a lot of those, you know, internet marketers, the lifestyle design people, is you have to match up what your life priorities are with what you end up doing. I think that's actually a good thing for probably pharmacists to learn. I don't think they talk about lifestyle design when talking about careers in pharmacy, that, you know, if you get into this profession, there's going to be certain things that you need to be aware of. A lot of people tell me they hate schedules that they have in their work, regardless of community or hospital. They didn't even consider these things when they started.
The hours of the nights and holidays and things.
And you know, the VA is, the Veteran Affairs is a great institution. They have a lot of good things going for them. Of course, they have bad things going, just like every company does.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'd never considered and I hated was that I couldn't take off more than a week at a time. And some people would say, like, oh, that's amazing. Some people would say, wow, that's not great. But my point being is I could never take off, you know, and have a real vacation, because by the time the vacation started, you know, 3 or 4 days in, I finally have relaxed.
Exactly.
You know, and I want to start doing things. And then, oh, you got to leave in 3 days to go back home.
Right.
That was a real downer for me.
Yeah, of course.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Alex, the reason why you're able to shut things off 9-to-3 is because you don't have employees.
I have very little management issues.
In my area, it's just a blessing and a curse, of course. It's more of a blessing because I'm able to now to have the machine running while I don't have my hands on it. But all of the people, just like a machine, takes some greasing and that kind of stuff. You don't have that. So that's well done.
Yeah. And the other great thing, I suppose, about contractors is it's easy to let go of people that aren't a great fit, right?
Yeah, you just don't have any work for them.
Right. Yeah, I've struggled with that too, because I've thought about, well, what if I hire the wrong person as an employee?
Sure.
Have you adopted any policies on that? You know, the way I treat all my contractors is hire slow, fire fast.
Yeah.
Do you have any you know, methods or policies about that?
What I did, I was a little bit in your boat. And so this is back before 2011, right about when you were finishing up pharmacy school. And I had 3 full-time pharmacists, and they each had, let's say, 4 or 5 weeks of paid time off / sick time and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But you get 3 pharmacists that have 5 weeks off, and they take them from June, July, and August. There goes my summer. So here I was the boss and I was working all summer. And I could have said no to them. And I took some time off in that, but trying to sort of lead the army, I'd buckle down and do it. So starting in 2011, things were a little slower, and that was a good time to downsize because I could blame it on the economy and not on myself for, you know, so I was still a nasty guy for doing it in people's minds, but I wasn't as nasty as, you know, doing it on your own. So now we have 8 part-time pharmacists, and we run on 1 pharmacist at a time. And we run on a great program called When I Work. And so it's just basically cloud scheduling, but with a whole lot of phone interaction and so on. Now when a pharmacist is gone, I only lose someone for 12 or 16 hours a week if one of them that's doing more shifts in the week is leaving. Typically then I've got 7 pharmacists that have to pick up 12 hours. And so usually it's 1 or 2 pharmacists picks up 2 of the shifts and someone picks up the other one. That was eye-opening to me back then. And that's been really nice. And they're not contractors. They work for me. But in theory, it's the same way there that I don't have to kind of answer your question. I rarely commit anymore to a 40-hour employee. That's a big commitment. 2 things. One is that you have to know the person is productive for 40 hours. And 2 is you have to know if you can even stand their personality for 40 hours. You know?
Yes. Holy cow. You could probably do a whole episode just about, you know, hiring people and how to find out, will this person annoy me? This past summer, during my sabbatical, unfortunately, I had to make an emergency hire because we wanted to produce our annual virtual summit.
Gotcha.
And we had lost our marketer at the time, and I was looking for someone, and I had one of my team members look for me, and she found this person. And there were some warning signs in the beginning as I was trying to deal with, like, okay, you know, trying to vet her. And I should have listened to my gut, my warning signs, because that ended up being just such a mess. So overpaid and unfortunately underqualified to do what I needed her to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you go into entrepreneurship, unless you have some sort of lifestyle business where it's just you,
right,
which is really painful.
Yeah.
You have to run the risk of trusting someone else.
Right.
And I don't have much problem with that, but
yeah.
So I find that interesting that you've pursued that model, because in the pharmacist's mind, I would imagine that many of them don't feel safe.
Because they don't trust my benevolent dictatorship.
I didn't say that.
Well, here's the thing though, is because they're all rather part-time, it's typically, it's not their main income. Well, all of them have another income in the family, their spouse. And then most of them, it's just extra money.
There's some interesting research being published right now about the work week and about what, you know, certain countries are doing. I don't know if you knew this, but New Zealand? Are we on the same link?
Yeah, like 4 6-hour days or something?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact amount, but I know that they mandated, I believe, countrywide that you are not allowed to work 5 days a week or something like that. And so everyone gets to work, you know, that 4-day weekend or 4-day work week. And I don't know about you, but a 3-day weekend, it's the perfect amount. By Sunday, I feel like I'm ready to jump back into things.
Yeah.
And I, unfortunately with pharmacy, it's really hard to do something like that when you're a required function of a hospital that needs to be open 24/7.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm curious as to see when the pendulum is going to swing in that direction.
Right.
Right now, that is not even a focus for most pharmacists or our legislators, because it's all about pharmacy services, pharmacy payments, and, you know, that all that stuff.
Right.
And the job crisis, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm hoping at some point they can get more focus. It sounds like you've adopted a very flexible schedule then.
We used to have more full-time people, and because of things getting, frankly, business not as good, we don't have as many full-timers anymore, but we are able to flex that harder or softer depending on what we think the week is going to do or you know, vacations and so on.
Now, that is a skill that I'm interested in and my brain can't fathom. I've had to delegate out the budgeting and the income cash flow to one of our operations people just because it takes a certain mind, I think, to understand cash in, cash out. How does that work? Oh. What do we need to do? And rather than trying to master it, man, just delegate it. That's what I've done because it is so difficult.
So now when I read the news after you and I've talked, I'm going to say, because my wife and I will read the news in the morning on our different phones, you know, and chat. And I'll say, Margaret, look what they're doing in New Zealand. I'll say, before you know it, they're going to be working less than Alex does.
Let's hope.
One of the goals I always had was I said that I want a job where I'll never be bored. Mm. And I would take a lot of stuff instead of boredom. I would take anxiety probably and even probably, you know, moments of depression. I'd probably take a lot of stuff over boredom, I guess.
Yeah, you got to come to terms with that if you pursue entrepreneurship. Like you, I went through some depression times of self-doubt, wondering, what am I doing? Am I doing the right thing? I have no idea. And no one knows. No one can give me this answer. What is it that you do that you find so fulfilling about your work that doesn't make it work?
If I have to work as a pharmacist, a shift, which I don't do very often, I just don't like those days at all.
Do your technicians and pharmacists know that?
I
Do they listen to your show? We're recording, right?
There's two reasons I don't like it. The one reason is because I know I've got some other pain in the ass thing to do. I got some problem I have to be working on, and I know I can't do it now because I've got to work till, you know, 7 or when we used to be open later till 9. I know I'm going to have to do it later or something. So that's why I didn't like it for that reason. But then when there was times where I've got this idea that I want to be working on and I don't want to be doing this at the time because it's stopping me from doing the research and so on. So I didn't hate it in and of itself. It's because I either had something worse to do or something more fun to do. And that got in the way for me.
Right. What are those projects that you really enjoy?
I like to sit. I suppose I like to create. Definitely I like to create. And that's why I don't like to teach. I don't like to do repetitive things. But I have the blessing of having a business that allows me to create without any pressure. You know, so for example, the podcast, you know, traveling and maybe creating just thoughts at a convention or something like that. I don't have that pressure on me because I already have that income, the good Lord willing, knock on wood, at least right now I have the income to do that.
So you're mainly working on projects that potentially are revenue generating?
For example, I'll spend a lot of time now talking to my chief operating officer and chief revenue officer. So the operating guy is all the HR and stuff in the store and so on. And my chief revenue guy is all the insurance and those kind of things. And we work on a kind of a neat program called Monday.com. It allows me to have ideas and not necessarily carry all of them out. But if they do get carried out, then I have help to carry those out. So a lot of time just creating new ways to do things in the business, try to do new revenue streams. That's probably my creativity I'm talking about is creating stuff, working on the business instead of working in the business. You know how that goes. When you think of something for your stuff, Alex, your favorite's not filing the papers and stuff after that. Then you're on to the next thing, you know?
Hate that stuff. Hate that stuff. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, working on the business is the most fun. That was the major transition I made about a year ago. I was spending a lot of time working with clients, mainly one-on-one and in groups. And I had spent good majority of my time trading my time for dollars.
Sure.
And it was good money, but I wasn't really getting anywhere.
Right.
I think that's where most pharmacists start, though, in businesses like that. They like the whole like consultant world, especially like the health consultant, it's great ideas. And I think there's a lot of potential, but you end up, you know, trading one job for another. You're not really creating a business.
Yeah, right.
But it has the potential. Is it scalable? That's the biggest question to ask. It's why I think the whole MTM idea hasn't panned out.
Yeah.
Because no one has figured out how to scale this. The MTM model is not working because if it was, every local pharmacy would be adopting the model, right? Because it would make money. Unfortunately, things are priced so low that the cost of hiring a pharmacist to do the work isn't, the margin's so low. So yeah. why even do it? You could argue it's the right thing to do. You could do it as a side hustle. And
right.
Those things are true, but you're never going to grow it beyond a side hustle because of how low.
And you're buying another job, basically. Maybe one that you like better.
Yeah, and that's totally okay if that's what you want to do. Freelancing is a way to make a living. It's just you're right. going to be stuck doing that.
Yeah.
And you have to realize it. I think where pharmacists can make more money and scale things at a better rate is being that consultant who can charge a lot more of a fee directly, you know, cash from a patient and provide those kinds of services. I think that's scalable, but there are so many problems with the route that I see, namely being, and you can't overcome it, but the biggest one being that the public doesn't see pharmacy as valuable.
Right.
Because we have traditionally for decades been free.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start charging a reasonable price, hundreds of dollars
yeah.
for a consultant,
yeah.
you know, you almost have to go the route of like health coaching, which, I mean, I've paid hundreds of dollars for a health coach and seen some results from it, but it wasn't because of like their expertise. I almost wonder if that's the route that is needed for that sub niche of pharmacy and entrepreneurship, because to say like, oh, I'm a pharmacist and that's why you need to pay me
yeah.
so much money. Like it's almost not the approach to take because people don't care. They're like, well, if I just want to go talk to a pharmacist, I'll just go to
yeah.
you know, Walgreens, Walmart and talk to them.
Yeah.
You're not bringing that unique value.
Pharmacists have to go the way of stewardess and versus flight attendant and janitor versus custodian and, you know, trash man versus, you know, they've got to reinvent the name. And really the pharmacy name is going to get you practically a lower fee.
Yes, I totally agree. Anyone listening to this and maybe is inspired by what I share, please contact me. So something, a fun project that I work on every Friday is I think about how can we change the public's perception of pharmacy.
Right.
And the two main methods that I see at influencing the public at large is media and specifically television and video games. Right now, if you do a search, there's this game called Euro Trucker. Okay. Stick with me. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Euro Trucker. The concept of the game is to drive a truck in Europe. That's what you do.
That's what you do.
Now, if you had to guess how many people are playing this, what would you think? A thousand, a few thousand, 10,000 maybe? You'd be wrong. There is well over a few million people who play this game. This is one of the most popular games on a platform called Steam. And it's people driving a truck. Okay.
Yeah.
So think about how that impacts, you know, the trucking industry. It gets people interested. More people are thinking about, well, maybe I could do this. The same thing happened to CSI, Crime Scene Investigation, which arguably is one of the most boring jobs out there. Any yeah. CSI would tell you, like, it's not
yeah.
CSI. It's not that exciting. So why can't that happen in pharmacy? Why can't we create a game that shows pharmacists doing weird and wacky stuff and changes people's perception of what we actually do? There are so many games about being a doctor, not a pharmacist. And in the media, I've done a pretty thorough search in television. We are almost never really portrayed well. in television.
Exactly.
And if they made a show, The Office, about people selling paper, so really boring, not that interesting, right. And yet they engaged an audience in a very mundane place. I know that we had Vials on Amazon, which in my opinion was not a great show, structure-wise, nor did it really portray pharmacy in all that well of a light. So if you have a crazy idea and you want to change the public perception, please contact me. I'd love to chat with you. But that's like a big vision that I have that I would hope could change the way people see pharmacists, that we are valuable, that we do know quite a bit, and that should translate into a valuable service that is worth money and not just – you know, going up to the local pharmacy and expecting to pay nothing for an expert's advice. It's so rare.
Devil's advocate, Alex, here's the problem.
Yes.
Pharmacists, what we want to get paid for now, this has to happen, is standing up and opening our mouth up and down and talking. Well, what I mean by that is even CSI gets to snap the gloves on, and the lawyers get to, you know, pick up their briefcase and walk out in a huff, you know, and doctors get to have their scalpels and all that kind of thing. And, you know, this is cliche where when the news wants you on, they say, pharmacist, I'll pick up a vial and count. You're like, no, we do more than that. We're not going to have that visual. But the problem is then what is the visual of a pharmacist?
That's the thing that we don't have, right?
We don't have a visual.
I'll play devil's advocate back and point to the reality, which is we do not have a clear vision of what we do.
Now we're triple devil's advocate. Even if we even if we had one.
Even if we did, what would it be?
Even if we did, you can't have a TV show of someone just standing there thinking. That'd be about as exciting as my goal of sitting.
Right. So the vision is, I think what the associations are trying to put us in is we're basically like pseudo doctors, right? We're PAs and NPs with a specialized knowledge. I think that is the picture that they want for us. And it does make sense. But the question I have is then how can the public understand how we are unique, right? We're an NP with medicine knowledge.
What we can do that, not me, don't come to me for this, but I mean, in general, a pharmacist, what they can do, what nobody else can do, is figure out serious drug lineups.
Right.
Or a patient has to be on this drug, they have to be on this drug, but the two of them together are going to kill the person. But if you don't use the two of them, they're going to die. They're saying, don't take blood pressure and don't do this and don't do swabs of the mouth, because that is a nurse practitioner and that is a PA. So what do pharmacists do that only they can do? And is that serious drug interactions?
I mean, I agree with it, but I would go a step further. I think I would go back to what we were, I think, all taught probably in academia, that we should be the mechanism that chooses therapy.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
We should be the ones, since we're the experts and doctors only get usually one semester of pharmacology.
Yeah.
We should be the people deciding, what do you get?
Yeah, right.
The doctor should do what they're great at, which is diagnosing.
Right.
But this is a really complicated answer or question too. But, you know, who's responsible for this? Why have pharmacists let this happen to us? Is it just because of who we are as a profession? Is it because of how we were nurtured, or is it nature? But I feel like the picture that we should show the public is we are therapy experts, and we will help you with all of those needs. You don't need to go to your doctor to change a medicine. You should just be a pharmacist.
Yeah, right.
But the sad thing is, and it kind of goes back to our perfectionism roots, is that we want guidelines for everything.
Yeah.
We have to have a guideline on how to do this, because if we don't follow the guideline, then we're breaking rules.
They want all of this responsibility, but as soon as someone dies because of a drug interaction, they're saying, don't look at me. I just put them in the bottle.
I'm an advocate for provider status. I think it's a good thing to achieve. But the truth is, I don't think many pharmacists will accept it.
Hmm.
And that's based on the data that we have from Canada and the UK.
Interesting.
where in the UK, the APHA, they did a report on like provider status. And I think it was back in 2014 or 2015. And they looked at the Canada and the UK and they brought in two things about it. And they were like, they were talking about it in a light where like, oh, this is good. Well, I think in one of the provinces in Canada, I think Alberta, 2% of the pharmacists had taken on provider status.
Wow.
According to their report. And then in the UK, where they've had provider status, I think a little bit longer, 10% of pharmacists took on the responsibility. So while this may be a good step in the right direction, this shows, I would say, that by and large, we say we want this, but I think in practice, many people are not going to want to take it on.
When we said who was to blame for this, our forefathers and foremothers are to blame too, because if you're comfortable, you're not going to go too far outside of your
right.
of your boundary. You know, my grandpa, my dad, I knew coming into the pharmacy that I was riding a wave and I didn't disrupt it too much. The wave was pretty good. It's kind of crashing now, but it's pretty good for 25 years. And I think that coming up on these salaries, maybe being cut in half for pharmacists, that's maybe when that number goes yeah. up, when people have to look for other things.
The changes have to force innovation, right? My hope is that as things get worse, people are going to figure out ways to make it better.
They're going to figure out things.
Yeah, the pendulum will swing. It's just a matter of when. We don't know.
Don't give me any dollar figures, but percentage-wise, what is your revenue sources? You know, okay, it's 20% this, it's 10% from this program. How does that break down for your business at this time?
So I would say about 30 to 40% is services. So that's typically career coaching, consulting, you know, the occasional mock interview, resume review, mm-hmm. those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it is the products that we promote and sell. So courses, events, smaller one-off products, those sorts of things. That's the majority of our revenue.
Things that people would find on your website.
We typically don't like just throw up our courses on our website because I don't know if you've found this or if other people have who sell information type products is I don't get a whole lot of sales that from people who just come to the website and like they just buy something. It's very rare.
Gotcha.
And the other problem that we have to deal with is like coaching. Most people don't understand even what coaching is like.
Right.
It sounds like voodoo science.
Right.
What the heck is this? Yeah. Do you just tell me what to do?
Yes.
I explain to people, like, honestly, we try to treat ourselves like Disneyland. You have to come and see to experience it. So we have a policy that anyone who's interested in changing their careers or starting businesses or helping with a business is we provide complimentary coaching. And if you enjoy it, if you love it, hey, you know, we can talk about what that looks like if we're to serve you in that way. And if you're not, you're like, you know what? I tried out Disneyland. Not that great. I don't want to go back. Then fine. No skin off our nose.
Gotcha.
It's more about providing, I hope, a world-renowned experience of what coaching is, which should be to help you develop your goals, to hold you accountable to those things, and to help you move past whatever obstacles have been stopping you from doing that. That's always what coaching has been.
You can then introduce some of your products that you'd rather not just have someone stumble over on their own online.
We do sometimes do that. Many times when people join our coaching program, we just gift things to them.
Where's the 70% from your products then? If you don't have them online and you don't have your coaching people buy them.
Webinar. Email.
Oh.
So we get people to sign up for our emails for like the things that we give away. And then we promote a webinar, which then in turn promotes our courses.
People don't stumble on it online. But once they're connected through a webinar or email, that's where you're picking some of that up.
It's hard to get a complete stranger to trust you to buy anything from you, especially mm-hmm. online. Unless you're like selling a product on Amazon or something, you know, why should people buy from you?
Sure.
And so we focus a lot of our time on creating content to show people our expertise, but as well as ideally help them make some sort of decision, whether it's something small like how do I write a better cover letter,
right,
to how do I create a career that fits the lifestyle I want.
Sure.
We do that through webinars, through blogs, through podcasts, through YouTube channels.
Gotcha.
And the main fundamental shift that I have to get people to believe is that instead of saying not me to maybe me, because so many pharmacists right now feel stuck. They feel like pharmacy has abandoned them. They feel like nothing good can come from this profession. And others feel like the job market is so harsh right now, there's no way I can find something that's better than what I have right now.
Gotcha.
And so we have to show them through stories, through evidence, through case studies of students in our class, our pharmacists, mm-hmm. and show them, hey, we've helped people who were burnt out and said, I don't even know if I want to be a pharmacist anymore, and help guide them to a profession within pharmacy that they actually love.
Yeah.
And we've gone so far as even, it's not that we want to attract people with mental illness, but we've helped people who were suicidal go from, my job is making me feel like I'm not worth living.
Right.
And help them transition into something that is significantly better.
Right.
I never anticipated that. I never anticipated getting emails from those people. But in order for them to trust us, they have to see our expertise and our authority in the space and the stories of who we've helped. Because when you're in this, I don't, you know, I would be curious to see if your other entrepreneurs feel the same way. When you're in this space of, I guess, selling information and selling services like coaching, people, especially because of our industry, naturally want to feel like I'm just selling snake oil. Mm-hmm. I'm just selling positivity, which I hate, by the way. I hate public. I do not like those public speakers that are like, rah, 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 just believe in yourself. Like,
yeah, right.
That's hogwash. You got to base your thoughts and ideas off of research and success from other people.
Right.
So I have to combat that by first showing them, I understand where you're at. I was there. These are the things that have helped me. These are the things that have helped other people. This is what research says about career development. Now, here's how you apply it to your unique situation. Here's how you find a career path within pharmacy that would suit your desires and your needs and your strengths. And ideally, your curiosity. And if not, then, well, you know, maybe we can help you find something else. We've helped people get into tech companies, financial industry. We've helped people get into real estate. I mean, practically anything that they want to do, we help walk them into those things. But the vast majority of people who feel stuck in pharmacy, we help them figure out why they're stuck, what they can do to transition out of the job, or in some rare cases, we help them just figure out how to restructure their current job and negotiate better conditions based on their desires and their wants. So many people feel like they need a new job.
Yeah.
But when you already have one, they don't want to go through the trouble of hiring a new one.
Yeah.
You know? So it's possible in most cases to negotiate something into your job that makes it significantly better.
Yeah, right.
But I don't create webinars trying to sell people like, hey, just change your situation at your current job, because most people think like, no way. You know, my boss is a jerk.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk to them. There's no way things are going to get better. So we talk a lot about what are the fundamental things that indispensable pharmacists do to identify where's the greatest needs right now in the world. What are the things that I'm most passionate about solving? What problems do I really care about? And what is my greatest strength? How can I put all of these things together to create a career where I don't have to really worry about where my next job is?
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing about entrepreneurship, because case in point, if the Happy PharmD was to totally fail, I lose everything. The internet fails. Okay, well, if the internet fails, I don't know what I'll do. But if those things fail, I have a myriad of skills and, most importantly, relationships with amazing people to help me bounce back through probably freelancing for a while until I come up with my next idea.
Yeah.
Sadly, so many pharmacists don't feel that way. They don't feel like their skills are transferable or that anyone values them.
Yeah.
When there are companies out there that do, and some of them don't even know that they're looking for a pharmacist, unfortunately.
They've got to trust that you can do something, but they also have to trust that anything can be done about their situation. They got to trust both.
Yeah.
I imagine there's a lot of people going into therapists and things that just don't believe a change could even happen.
I mean, I talk with at least a dozen pharmacists a week, and over the years, hundreds, if not well over, you know, maybe even 2,000. I am surprised by the amount of pharmacists on, you know, anti-anxiety meds and depression meds.
Yeah.
It's right. Shocking.
Yeah.
Sad. I don't know if there's like a study out there that looks at mental health and pharmacy. Maybe I should start. Actually, we have a mental health survey coming out as of this recording. We honestly saw that Medscape was publishing every year a burnout and suicide report for physicians. There's not a whole lot of data about pharmacists. And so if you're not burned out, great. If you're burned out, cool. If you're depressed, it doesn't matter. Whatever your mental health is, we're hoping people will fill this out.
Alex, do you like attention? Here's what I mean by that.
Yes, tell me.
I talked to somebody for the show a bit ago. I asked her the same thing. Do you like attention? Is this cool to have this big group and all this stuff like that? And she's like, no, I did it because I really care about this and that. And I said, yeah, but isn't it cool to have started this and do this and have people kind of know you and know you're the mover and all? No, not really. I'm just out. I said, what would you do if you solved everything? There's no other problems anymore. She said, oh, then that'd be enough then. I'm thinking, are you crazy? You know, it's like, it's fun for me to build. And maybe that's the business person in me. It's fun for me to build it and then later decide how I'll use it. So, for example, I was mentioning to her that 12 years ago, I started independent pharmacy owners or something on LinkedIn, a group.
Yeah.
And it grew. And I didn't use it for anything until basically now with my podcast, I can use it and abuse it after 12 years. Do you like the attention? Or if your business was doing fine, would you be fine being a non-face in the pharmacy crowd?
You're wanting to use this for the podcast, right? I'll answer it honestly.
Yeah, if you want to be honest about it, yeah.
Yeah. I won't lie. The attention is fun.
I like it too.
This is a lot of fun to do. And honestly, it comes from my roots. I had more detentions than all of my classmates put together growing up. I was constantly finding out, how can I make my friends laugh? What can I do to cause the most disruption and get away with the least amount of punishment?
Yeah, the instigator.
Yeah, that was me. And I was voted class clown. And I won't deny that I really do enjoy the attention. And honestly, I think it's because my parents divorced really young. That influenced me. I didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah.
I was seeking out, you know, attention and making people laugh was a lot of fun. I wanted to be a comedian as a kid.
Yeah.
And I won't deny that there is a certain, you know, when you have a platform,
yeah,
people look to you for your expertise, and that does feel good.
Yeah.
I won't deny that at all.
Yeah.
That being said, I've learned that even the small, I wouldn't call it fame.
No, I gotcha.
Or even infamy.
I gotcha.
You know, the small amount that I have gained, it doesn't make my life better. It doesn't make me feel better as a person.
No.
It, in some ways, it is humbling because some of the people who contact me, you know, they're in their 50s, 60s.
Right.
And, you know, I feel very privileged to gain their trust.
Yeah.
That I can help them.
Yeah.
I think one day I don't have to be the face of the Happy Farm D. I think that I'd be willing to hand that off to someone else. And I'd be okay with that. I think what's more important is the what we talked about earlier, which is the aspect of like doing work that's really, really fun.
Sure. Right.
Right. And for me, that is teaching. And I think because, you know, you're a teacher, you gain authority by teaching on things.
Yeah.
I got to do a burnout CE for freece.com. And as much as I don't enjoy the realities of burnout,
right,
it's so much fun teaching that, and getting the messages that I get from people is just really encouraging to keep doing those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So in a way, I think it just comes with the territory, right? If you have a podcast, if you do any kind of thing like this, people are going to look to you as someone with at least some answers to the things that you want.
I was the same way. I was child number 8 of 12 and and probably look for some of that attention. But I think that it all kind of goes together with the technology, whether it's the news or different things. Usually that means that, well, in my case, doing something else rather than standing right in the pharmacy. These are means to different connections and things like that. And that's, I suppose, I like some of that.
Well, you're in the right business because the way with technology and how it's going, you know, connection is becoming, you know, a very popular term and people are willing to pay for connections. An interesting thing that's happening in Japan, which arguably has a much different culture than us, is that you can rent people. You can rent a mom or a dad or a daughter for a period of time. And it just goes back to the very simple idea that people just want to connect. We are driven by that. And by not having it, we force ourselves to be miserable.
Yeah. I hope my kids don't listen to this because I'll probably see them looking up some father sites or something like that. I'm average. That's all right. Hey, Alex, going back now, has all these bumps and problems been great for you being a pharmacist because you're able to help solve things? So you found a place to problem solve? Or what would you do if you would have done it over again? If you're 16 now, what college route would you take, if any?
And I'm back in 2006 when I graduated.
Yeah, and you're up in
the UP.
You're up in Norway.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the UP.
I think I would still go down the same path because I was arrogant. I think if I was to encourage myself to do one thing different, it would be you need to take your career a little bit more seriously and start pursuing some real ideas for something, because just hoping that things will fall together is an awful way to approach your career. If I was in pharmacy school right now and I took the same approach, I would be unemployed, I'm certain, because I was very just, whatever, I'll figure it out.
Gotcha.
I waited till the last minute, you know, to do residency and decide on that.
Yeah.
I wish I took a much more proactive approach. Okay, there's one thing I would do that maybe would be the catalyst of everything else. It would be to give myself How to Win Friends and Influence People and demand that I read that at 16. Because I read that book when I was 22, 23. And I realized as I was reading this book, oh my gosh, I've been a jerk for most of my life. And I need to treat people how I believe I need to be treating others. By saying I'm a jerk, I literally mean like I would just make fun of people for the sake of making me feel better about myself.
It comes with the class clown thing.
It does. Yeah, for sure.
It sounds like as soon as you can in college, you got to kind of pick your career and also kind of pick your passion almost.
I blindly accepted pharmacy as my career path because basically my mom discouraged the comedian route. She's like, you're funny, son, but that's not a career. So I'm good at math and science, and I don't want to touch blood, butts, or guts. So what's out there for me?
I had a guy, he's out in Hollywood now. He does some ads. He was on Jimmy Kimmel once in a while in the skits, but he was a mechanical engineer, went to Michigan Tech and decided to go out to Hollywood. Have you tried the stand-up route?
No.
Why not?
Well, because I'm probably too focused right now on my own thing. But one of my goals for 2019 was to start my own personal channel. And I actually have put some short videos of me trying to be funny. Comedy is subjective. So if you don't think it's funny, I understand.
You know what, though, Alex? I don't think I would like comedy because those comedians, they're telling the same damn joke 600 times a year.
It's very repetitive. Yeah.
You know, it's very repetitive, even though you're getting a laugh from it.
Yeah.
I don't usually do this, but we're with the Moses of pharmacy here. So what tidbit would you have to give to somebody right now?
I think the best advice I could ever give is to build relationships. I don't know what it is about pharmacists, but it seems like so many people are scared to approach other people and to even just like help people. It seems like people feel like networking is sleazy, and I hate that term, but I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for the relationships of others. And I think a lot of successful people would say the same thing. So reach out to me. I'm sure Mike would be amenable to talking with you as well. But there's a lot of people out there who are really positive and they want to help. So simply just reach out, find out a way for you to bring value to them and find out what you could do to help them and build a genuine relationship. I think if every pharmacist did that, we would be in a much better place.
All right, I'm going to be a devil's advocate on that, boy. Alex.
Do you do this for all your other guests?
How many devils do we have?
I've listened to other them. I don't remember devil's advocate session.
No, only for the ones that have such good advice that I have to crack it a little bit.
Oh, shush. Okay, what's the devil's advocate? What is he saying?
Are you just noticing that in pharmacists because you're so good at it and you spend so much time with pharmacists that you know that they don't easily get into relationships? Or are you able to compare that to other fields? And pharmacists really don't seem to have professional relationships as much.
I'll give you a story to explain my viewpoint on this.
Yeah.
If you're a pharmacist, you may have never had the pleasure of going to a conference outside of your profession.
Mm.
I would encourage you to do so, because what you will find is a conference with a lot of people having fun.
Right.
This isn't a dig at any particular association, but for whatever reason, even our parties, our places where people are supposed to be having fun, are so boring by comparison.
Yeah.
When I got into business, I started to go to business conferences and like software development and tech founders and podcasters as well. And these people, I'm like, why is everyone here is so happy and willing to talk to you and they're willing to introduce themselves and they find, you know, me engaging and interesting. And you go to pharmacy and everyone, I don't want to like bash our profession, but it's like, we don't know how to have a good time. We don't know how to talk to other people. We know how to stay in our cliques and who we know. And, if I don't know you, then I don't, you know, I'm going to be guarded. I'm not going to open up to you.
Right.
So I think it is a profession-wide problem.
That's interesting. Some of it I could see because, like, I know the independents, maybe since the last, let's say the last 12 years, since the last recession and things have been tough and so on. So they stand around and bitch and stuff like that. But you're probably seeing that with people who are not affected that way. And you've done the sifting in your mind to say, no, this is just who these pharmacists are.
Yeah, I don't think it's intentional. I think it's just our profession is, I think, more guarded, and it translates into a more difficult time networking. I won't deny that it is easier for me to talk to people. I do feel like I'm more extroverted, but even if you're introverted, there are simple things. No, I'm a hard 5 out of 10.
Oh, come on.
Don't let Mike fool you.
Come on.
Don't let Mike fool you. I have come to terms with I'm a hard 5 out of 10. Okay, maybe a 6. My wife thinks I'm a 10, but she's biased. Mm. I wish I was good looking like Brad Pitt. My business would probably be more successful. You know, to your point about how the attention, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know how we change this as a profession.
It's got to be that pharmacy attracts that.
Yeah.
It couldn't be that you change that much as a pharmacist. Well, it's got to be either it attracts it or when they get into the culture, it automatically brings them down to that level. Maybe that's it.
I think it's a myriad of factors, but I do think our psychology as a profession is a major cause of this. A pharmacist and he has a PhD in psychology, I believe. Zubin Austin, he has written multiple things about the psychology of pharmacists, and he's brought up these things before. Is it nature or nurture?
Really?
Are we our own worst enemy? Are we attracting the right people? There's studies out there that show that the majority, vast majority of pharmacists did not choose pharmacy as their first profession.
Mm.
that has implications. Like,
sure.
Some of us are self-loathing. You know, some of us has, we say, many of our clients that we've talked to say things like, I wish I was a carpenter. I wish I was a plumber. I wish I was, you know, a business owner, or I did something completely else because that's what I wanted to do since I was a kid. How do you coach these people who have built up then lifestyles that necessitate a pharmacist salary when you know they would be happier making toys? I mean,
right.
We are a weird and odd profession, and I have been looking for other professions that have the same issues we have, and I haven't found a single one.
Arguably, if someone doesn't have the grades or funding or luck of the draw to be an MD, a doctor, they might default to pharmacy. Well, let's just say yep. Versus the other way around. There's probably not too many people that try for pharmacy school and then default to be an MD because they couldn't, you know, you know.
Right. Yeah. There are those few, you know, that complete the pharmacy degree and then they go to school to become a doctor. There's very few of those, but we do hear stories of them. But on the flip side, I have never once heard of a doctor becoming a pharmacist.
Sure. And so the question would be then, in addition to people maybe having the golden handcuffs and doing pharmacy more for the money versus the pleasure of being a carpenter, it's also people that meant to be a doctor and they feel their second status now?
I would agree with you. I think I don't know if I would add repressed to our profession, but I do feel like a lot of people, you know, had different dreams from themselves when they practice, right? I wanted to write a book. I wanted to create. I wanted to be an artist. I wanted to do all these weird and other things, but they were unsafe and unpractical. Well, if you feel that way, I would encourage you. You live in one of the best times in the world's history to do crazy things like that and to make a living. But it does take some lifestyle changes to adopt something like that.
I tell my kids it all the time. I'm like, you guys don't know. You're in the first generation ever that, one, you have the options. You don't have to sleep with Harvey Weinstein or whatever the guy's name is, you know, to get to the next level. It's the Justin Biebers, whoever's best on YouTube, just like soccer players, you know, whatever kid running around, you know, in whatever country it is, it can rise to the top. That's number one. And number two, once you find something, you can do it basically for free. You can do it on your phone or on the computer. We're in a crazy amazing time for opportunity, but you got to be good at it.
You do. But I mean, even right now, I have a side hustle where I just do voiceover work, typically for countries outside of the US. And if I wanted to, I could just do that full time.
Wow.
But it's just something fun, something I do, and it doesn't take much time, and I enjoy it. It's so easy to make money. And it's why, again, I love entrepreneurship, because you can have 100 people pay you $1,000. You lose one person, then just go get another. But to have one person pay you $100,000, they can decide at a whim, Mr. Business Owner, to just let, you know, you go. And you're done. Now you got to go find another job. That's more risky.
I love that position you're in because you trust yourself. You trust yourself that you're resourceful in order to and can do something that's valuable.
Sometimes I do have considerable self-doubt.
You put on an air of being able to have that trust in yourself. Okay. On the far side, though, is a job that you get fired from the next day. I've always been in a position that if my business starts going down, I've got like maybe hopefully like 3 years to jump off the ship. But as an employee, I mean, I couldn't imagine being a banker or something, having this huge mortgage, and then the next day you have zero income.
Like that. And everyone thinks that's the safe way to go.
No, it's the opposite.
It's what I thought. You know, you get all this money for doing a job. No. I would argue that it is still a safe route. As long as you are really good and you have a reputation for being someone who delivers on a sane amount of value. Unfortunately, what happens to most is they just coast in their job, right? They just do their job. They go to work. They come home, and that's it.
Right.
They don't pursue their passions at their job. They don't really develop their skills or abilities, and so they end up being dispensable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the condition we find so many people, unfortunately.
I like what you're doing, Alex, in terms of having people believe in themselves and believe in you, that you can find them a better match, a true match, and not just say, well, reach for the stars and we're willing to have a failure rate for those of you that don't do it, but we're going to keep preaching this reach for the stars and anything kind of
thing. When I talk with people who join our class, mainly our main one, I tell everyone, look, I want to brag about you. I want you to get into a new job. I can never guarantee that you're going to get that new one, right?
Right.
What I can guarantee is that we're going to figure out a path to get there. And we're in it for the long haul. So we work with people for, you know, a long time. The average, I think there was a recent stat came out that said the average job search for a pharmacist is now like 18 months.
Jeez.
Which is a long time.
It's a long time.
And it's the truth of the market. And it really, but it's also dependent on all the unique things that you have for you, because getting a new job is not an easy thing. Especially if you have a bunch of limiting factors, like I don't want to move. I don't want to work for a startup. I don't want to, I want to work from home. There's all sorts of things that limit people from taking jobs that they could easily get.
Right.
But maybe you're not paid as much. Maybe it's only part time. I mean, there's so much that you could do that you could work up to make more.
Yeah.
I usually argue that if you get a job that you love what you do, you're paid less, you are significantly more likely to generate revenue outside of that because you love the work and you create opportunities, or you drive more revenue for the company and you get a raise.
For sure.
Like the ceiling for pharmacists is so low for what we can make. 150, 180, and maybe some executive positions.
Right.
Or director levels. And that's it.
Sounds good to a 25-year-old.
Right.
Yeah, it's a fairly low ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Alex, I am a big fan. I'm going to remain a big fan.
Thank you.
That sounds negative. Like, after I talk to you for a couple hours, I'm still going to remain a big fan.
You've passed my test. I will continue to talk to you.
I'm a big fan. I'm going to be a bigger fan. Let me put it that way. All right, Alex. God bless. Keep up the good fight.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.